Welcome to the conversation that every woman should be having. I'm Maya Fisher-French, and my co-host and inspiration for the podcast is Andrea Carr. Now, it's important to understand that the idea for this conversation came about from an experience that Andrea had in getting divorced. But this is not just about getting divorced. This is not just about a woman. This is really about anyone who is in a relationship and wants to find a way to talk about issues like money, about equality, and especially when you have children and there's that additional workload of caregiving. We want to understand how to navigate the space so that it feels fair, both from a financial, physical, and emotional point of view. Now, in our first conversation, which I hope you've all listened to, we spoke to a prominent family lawyer about marriage contracts and unpaid work. And today we're going to be speaking to a financial planner about how to find financial independence in a relationship or in a marriage, especially when you are the caregiver. And I think, Andrea, as well, one of the things we need to talk about is that the way we're socialized around money is so much about the way we raise. And one of the biggest things that does not happen in most families is that we don't talk about money. Absolutely. I've worked out at my age that so much of the way I treat money and the way I've had conversations about money in my adult years have been drawn from experiences from growing up, the culture in my own home as I was raised, and the experiences that I've had growing up have made me who I am today. I realize now more than ever how similar I am to my mum and how growing up with her and watching her relationship with money has impacted how I have got a very similar relationship with money today. I grew up with a stay-at-home mom who raised three of us children on the farm, and she never really had money of her own. My dad gave her money to raise us as children, and early on in my childhood years, I remember my mum selling eggs to the local community. She raised chickens and used that egg money, which lived in a tartan tin in her cupboard, to treat us with those extra luxuries that we didn't always have growing up. And I remember my mum put that tin into her handbag and took it to Durban and bought me my first suit. When I first moved to Joburg and started working, that was all because of my mum's egg money. But my mum never talked about money. She helped my dad with the running the farm, and she was more of a passive person when it came to those kinds of things. And as a result, I've never openly and willingly sat down and talked about money and the relationship I have with it and how I should be looking after myself and making sure that I am financially independent. And that really does stem from my own upbringing. My mum was also the same person that sent me and my husband at the time to marriage counselling. This was an absolute essential for her. It was certainly not something that prepared me for having any of these discussions as an adult. And it fell woefully short in terms of preparing me for what was inevitably going to happen, where I knew I was going to end up being a working mom. It was always going to come to the point at which I was going to have to balance working and raising children. And that whole experience of marriage counseling didn't prepare me for what the world really is like today, unfortunately. You know, Andrew, it's so interesting that you talk about, you know, marriage counseling. And I think somebody was saying to me, oh, yes, you know, they did marriage counseling. It was discussion about how many children should you have. No one ever discusses how much are these children going to cost us and who's going to look after them. And I think, you know, what I would really advocate for anyone who's getting married is to speak to someone like our guest that we're going to be having on today. And that is Sunel Feltman. She is a financial planner. She's author of Manage Your Money, Live Your Dream. Now, I have to admit, I have known Sunel for 30 years, I think, about, right, not 25, 30 years. And over the years, Sunel, you and I have discussed children, we've discussed marriage, we've discussed money. So when it came to this topic, I thought I knew exactly who I was going to call on. So thank you and welcome on to this conversation.
Thank you so much, Maya and Andrea. It's so important to have these conversations. I was just thinking, my mum had cattle money. So I grew up on a sheep farm, and the few cattle that we had, the money that one money went to her. So she would buy the things that she enjoyed in around the house and so on with the cattle money. But very similarly, those kinds of money conversations never happened in our house. My dad was actually a financial advisor and worked for an insurance company. And so it was just natural that he took care of the money. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She raised the five of us. So I grew up with that picture of having a stay-at-home mom and a dad who actually took care of us financially and also took care of all the financial matters. And when I married someone who had the complete opposite. He grew up in a house where his mother was the person who took care of the money matters. And also very similarly, I don't recall having a lot of money conversations or seen a lot of money conversations in their home. So it was only in my own mid-30s when I realized we were not having the right conversations about money. And I was waiting for him and he was waiting for me because we were coming from different pictures to have those conversations. And despite the fact that I had by then three postgraduate financial qualifications, I convinced myself that I was not the one to take those decisions or make the move in that regard. And so that was my story. It was also around about that time when I started working with women with regards to money. I started doing workshops with women. And I really found that these discussions just don't happen often enough with women. And it gave me such insight into how women think and how, you know, how the pictures that we have from our childhoods actually do play such a big role. And that eventually led to me writing the book as well.
You know, Sunil, you and I were both, we worked together, we're both in the financial industry, and I have such a similar, I did my first budget, household budget, at the age of 32. And it was because of a financial crisis that we did it. And I have to just tell you that I stopped working for a period of time to have my child, and then, anyway, long story, I was working, and then I was retrenched, my husband was retrenched, and we kind of carried on spending the money and living our lifestyles. We never just changed anything. And then one day he was getting his bonus. He was now working at a new company. He was getting a bonus. And I was so excited because I was going to spend this money on new curtains. We just bought a new house. I wanted new curtains, cushions. And he said to me, Maya, we need to pay off the overdraft first. So now, Andrea, do you know what my reaction was? What overdraft? That is how out of touch I was with the finances. So I think this is an incredibly important discussion. And I think I want to really start with that as basic as that. You're getting married, you're putting finances together. How do you go about creating a budget that you're both involved in, engaged in, and are part of?
So as you know, I now run a financial planning business and called Foundation Family Wealth. And one of the things that we do with our clients now is actually help them do a joint budget. So we've divided budgets into three categories. It's needs, wants, and wishes. And what I see so often is that the wants and the wishes, especially of the stay-at-home mum, just don't come into the picture. So when we talk about the needs, I feel very strongly that the needs budget should be done together. But that budget should be done together, and that it should go into a joint budget. The income, both incomes, should go into a joint budget, paying for the joint expenses of the household. And then the discussion is very important about what are needs and wants and wishes, because then it comes down to the values of the family. Is private school education a need or a want or a wish? Our annual holidays, you know, where did that fit in? And so it's quite a useful tool that we've used. And funnily enough, with people from all walks of life, it is really interesting that it comes down to actually just talking about our different values that we come to the table with when we are in a relationship with someone. You know, one of the things that we talked about is this whole idea that some people's, and it comes down to the children as well. And some family members' wants and wishes are more important than others. And then the partner who has the highest income, you know, they get to spend on what they want, but the others don't. So it obviously also impacts the stay-at-home mum. Yeah.
Andrea, in your relationship, and how did you navigate that space? Were you like me and never did a budget until you had to?
I'm glad I'm not alone. I'm glad I'm not the only woman out there who has realized this at my age, that I absolutely did not prepare with all the right budgeting tools that I needed to when I first got married. I think if you, as you've already mentioned, if you go through a time of financial stress or life stress, you have to sit back and look very carefully at how your money is spent. And I think being financially comfortable, as I have been for the last 18, 19 years since I started working, means that I haven't been forced to sit down and relook at where the money goes. Just earlier this year, I sat down with 6 months worth of bank statements and went through the very, very depressing exercise of working out how much it costs to have children, for example. This is something I probably should have done 15 years ago. I should have done it 12 years ago when I had my first child. And also, I've realized now something that should be done every year. The way you spend your money when you've got a family unit of two versus a family unit of four and the age of your children differs every single year. And to do it once now, I had a number in mind. I thought I had a good idea of how much I was spending raising children. And the number that ended up on that spreadsheet was 30% higher than, in fact, I thought it was. And the father of my kids thought it was going to be 30% less than it ended up being. So we all have got a view at a very high level of where our money goes. But until you sit down with the bank statements and put it into a spreadsheet and see it in black and white, it's really a theoretical exercise.
Absolutely. And I think that was the biggest shock. I remember, still remember doing my first budget and bursting into tears at the end of it and saying, but this is how much is coming in and so much is going out. I don't know what to do about the difference. So it is. And I do a lot of work with people where we do budgeting and things like that. I have never met anyone who spends what they think they spend. Everyone spends more. So it's an incredibly, and maybe that's why we don't want to do the budget in the first place. But one of the things that I come across often when I'm talking to couples who do budgets is how the budget spending, and I love, so now I do exactly what you do. We have a joint household. We both put the money into it and the household money is jointly spent from there. And then I have my own little personal stuff and he has his little personal things that he deals with. But the household expenses, the kids, all of that is completely shared. But one of the problems I find is that when people don't do that, they allocate, they say, and generally the woman takes the groceries and the children's expenses. And the husband tends to pay the bond, the mortgages, the car finance. Now, over time, yes, at the moment we've had high interest rates, so it looks a little bit different. But over time, your inflation on groceries and on children and all of that is substantially higher than the repayments to a mortgage. So over time, I come across women who are taking on more and more credit card debt to keep up with household expenses, not personal expenses, household expenses, whilst their husband is actually building the assets. And I see that as a big disconnect. I mean, Sunil, do you think that is quite common?
You know, the longer I work with people, the more I realize that every household is different. And we bring so much into that relationship. And then we find a way of working in that relationship. And it's, you know, there's different cultures as well as and upbringings and so on, as we've talked about. But what generally I agree with you. What I've seen is that women do tend to spend on their children's education. They will sacrifice their own retirement for their children's education and for the family home, like we've also discussed before. They want, you know, a nurturing environment and a safe environment for their children. So that's just the nature of us when we become mums. But with regards to, you know, how we run our money as a family from there on, it really varies a lot. What, you know, some of the things that I've found is that if women are involved in their careers, they are all involved in the budget, involved in the running of the money, or even just involved in the discussions of the financial with a financial planner, there tends to be more cohesion with regards to the spending of the money and the saving and the investments than when they're actually not involved in those discussions. In general, when those discussions don't happen together, they happen separately, that's where we end up with problems with, you know, people getting to divorce or the death of a spouse, and it wasn't planned for properly.
I think your big theme really, Sunal, is you have to be working together about with money. And I come across a lot of couples who really don't believe that. They just say, well, you sort yourself out, I sort myself out. You can't come together, especially when you've got children. And I know, Andrea, you say that one of the biggest mistakes you made was that you put all the money into the children's education and not into investing into assets.
So I'm now a product of the decisions I've made unknowingly and without the conversation and debate that I know I should have had at the time. And I naturally fell into a default of that being that nurturing mom who provided for my children and arrived at every birthday party with an appropriate gift, which is more than you ever think it's going to be. And I have plowed as much as I can of my monthly salary, of annual bonuses when those get paid out, into the school fee account. It was an investment account that I opened specifically to fund private school fees for two children, which is not an insignificant amount. And the stress that comes with seeing that balance drop down and knowing that the next payment is due at the beginning of next term is a huge burden. And it just means that I've made some bad decisions in the rest of my financial situation to make sure that my kids are always and adequately prepared for. And now I realize at this age that I have neglected my own financial self and I haven't been creating wealth in my own name as I should have been. And I put myself second to my children, which I would probably not change, but I would certainly do some things differently, have some more conversations, and look at a more balanced approach to how we can raise children in the times in which we live in. And I think this also relates really to having those conversations, Sunal, you know, around how do you as a family unit, so I mean, you know, almost if we could take Andrea back 5 years or 10 years, how does one have conversations as a family unit with your spouse about what is the best for us as individuals, for our children, for our family? How do we make these choices about the right school, the overseas holiday, the retirement? How do we go about having those conversations?
Money conversations are hard. They are harder than, I think, talking about sex or the in-laws or anything else in marriage, really. I think I've come to the conclusion it's because it is such a concrete thing. You know, when you're talking about how much money I earn versus your earnings, it's, we link it to our value. It doesn't mean that I'm more valuable in this relationship than you are. It certainly has a lot of power. So, you know, when we come into those conversations and you're talking about, to talk about where this, you know, the spending will go and what investments we will make, the person who makes, you know, who makes the most money has more power normally. Unless there's a very, very conscious approach in the relationship. I've been on both sides. I've been the person making most of the money in a relationship, and I've been also the person, you know, who's taken a career, just to back a little bit in my career. So I've been on both sides of that coin, and I know, you know, the person who brings in more money has more power in the relationship. There's more potential to dominate the conversation and to direct the flow of the money in the relationship. So unless partners come into that relationship so conscious about what is going on underneath, the conversations are going to be very, very difficult to manage.
I want to get to a point just now, Sunal, about how do you then go about creating financial independence if you are the one who's the main caregiver, who is the lesser earner. How do you go about doing that? But before I go there, I do want to bring in, because you talked about power in a relationship, and there is huge potential for financial abuse. How do you identify that? How do you know if you're in a relationship where there is financial abuse, which, by the way, can go both ways?
Yes, that's very true. So when I first read the definition of financial abuse, it really shocked me, because it's something along the lines of just using money to control, to exercise control over the other person, or to exercise control about the flow of money in the relationship, or withhold money or information about money in a relationship. Now, if you think about how many relationships you know where that is true, it's actually shocking. So, I mean, money can be used. And you know, as you say, it can be both ways. It can also be used to shame. You're not earning enough. Why are you not earning enough money to keep me in a certain way, or to keep us in a certain standard of living that we were used to? So there are a lot of these underlying emotions involved as well with money. But definitely just coming back to the understanding that money has power. It is, you know, it's a powerful, powerful tool in relationships, and that we need to be very aware of it. And so often we've discussed about how we see women where information is withheld. You know, if you're married with the accrual, or you're married in community of property, and you don't know where the assets are, or you don't know where the money is going, and when you're asking, you're being told, you know, don't you trust me, or don't you trust that I'll take care of you, or you'll be taken care of, or that kind of thing. Well, it actually boils down to financial abuse, because it keeps you in a state of uncertainty, and a state of like anxiety. You know, I've met so many women who are so anxious about their money because they just don't have the information.
Andrea, in terms of your experience, and not talking about your specific relationship, but you like many women, are getting divorced, realizing that you should have done things differently. Do you think there was something that you wish you had done differently? I mean, would you have invested more in assets? What would you have done personally now?
If I got a redo, if I was able to go back 20 years, I would certainly have more conversations and be more open to discussing where we are now, discussing where we want to go in the future. And at every one of those important life-changing events, we all know what they are. Getting married is the first one. We focus so heavily at the time on the short-term priorities. What color shoes are you wearing to your wedding, and where are we going on honeymoon? As opposed to having decent, or getting decent financial advice around how we should be having financial discussions, and do we have the same values when it comes to money? Again, when you decide to have children, it's not just about deciding that you're going to have two and that you'd like a girl and a boy. It's deciding whether two is something you can afford, and what you're going to need to do within your collective household finances to afford two children. And then at the point at which you need to look at what schools to send them to. We just never seem to have had all of those conversations at the time that a big life-changing event happened. And it's not enough to put a budget together on the day you get married or the day you have children. This is something that you need to set time aside every single year and critically relook at how much comes in and where it goes every single month, and make cuts and make sure that you are making the right decisions for the household unit, for your children, and for yourself. If I got a chance at redoing this, I would look more critically at not falling into the default role of primary caregiver, working mom, so many things on my plate on a daily basis, in that immediate sense that I'm not looking to the future enough. And now is the time. I'm having so many more conversations within my social circle than I have ever had before around how other households are doing it, and the sacrifices they made and the decisions they made and the debates that they're having. And I've learned so much from the people in my life now that I'm open to having these discussions.
And so now, in terms of practical things that a woman should be doing. And man, and by the way, we're talking a lot about women because often they are the main caregiver. But I have come across recently a woman who said to me, oops, I'm actually the main breadwinner. My husband has stayed at home and raised the children. And I realize I have made all the mistakes or you know, I have used my financial power incorrectly. So it's not just a male-female thing. It is literally, I think, the role of who the primary caregiver is. So if you are the primary caregiver, if you are the one who's going to make the sacrifices financially to be the one to stay at home, so now what are the kind of practical things you should be doing to make sure that you are prepared for the future, you have assets, you're not going to find yourself financially vulnerable?
First of all, I would say stay involved in the family's financial affairs. Preferably have a family financial planner, so that once a year you can go and have that conversation about, are we on track with our planning for everything that we want to plan for? Are we on track for the events that may happen? One of the events that we never plan for is divorce. Now those are uncomfortable conversations to have, but we must think about that. You know, I always say in my financial planning training, I was trained for everything but planning for divorce for people. I think there were two lines.
They just assumed this is the death to us part.
Yeah. Anyway, so it is stay involved, right? And I would say today it's a really dangerous thing to do, to sacrifice one person's career in a relationship, because there's so much uncertainty in the world in general that to completely sacrifice one career is a risky decision to make. So I'd always say that keep irons in the fire, even as the stay-at-home person. Try and keep involved in your industry in some way, in doing some form of work, you know, and make peace with the fact that, you know, like let go of the guilt of children being raised by caregivers or there being other caregivers involved in your children's lives. They will benefit. They will become more independent. And then, of course, you know, partly the biggest problem is that households don't save. So at the end of the marriage, whether that is because of divorce or the death of a spouse, all of a sudden we wake up and we think, oh, we never saved. So if there are enough assets to divide, that's not a problem. But if the household didn't save and invest properly for the long term, that's actually where the problems come in. And then just lastly, I just want to make the point is, especially if we, you know, if someone's given up their career completely and that person is a highly educated person, there's no maintenance to be talked about, as you well know. There's no then payment for the free work you did overall.
The unpaid work, yes, over all the years.
But not only that, you're not compensated just for the loss of income, especially if you get divorced if there's a death of a spouse in your midlife, right? The chances of you actually making up that income, and then on top of that, you are losing your spouse's income. So, and then those are the years and years that towards the end of one's career that you start doing really well in general, right? So you are losing out on the best part of your spouse's career. So those are things that you need to think about when you make the decision to become a complete stay-at-home caregiver. And I think I think life has just changed a lot, and the picture that we've had that it's possible in today's world to have this stay-at-home person that's going to be there for the kids. Society has changed, right? There's no safety net for that person when that marriage ends.
And I think there's a very important point that Sunil makes, and I think you're busy dealing with that as well. When you get divorced, it is about the division of the assets. And so few people have built up assets, and the partner who was the bigger earner can continue to earn, but the one who isn't earning as much and who gave up on their career path, they will suffer a far greater impact on their lifestyle. So actually, if you are the stay-at-home mom or you are the one who's not earning as much, you, more than the other, should be making sure that you are growing assets and make sure that there are investments. I would say that is probably absolutely critical. So when it comes to which school should we send our kids or cars or overseas holidays, you say, wait, first I need to make sure my retirement fund is looked after and I've got assets so that if anything happens, I've got my own safety nets. I think that is probably a very powerful point to end on. So thank you so much, Sunil, for your insights. And we'll definitely be going to be chatting to you again because I would love to have, I think, Andrew, you raised this question about how should a woman and a mother invest in herself? And I think that's a conversation because we're not very good at doing that. But in terms of our listeners, please share your feedback with us, the topics you want to discuss, because I think the value of these conversations, of being able to talk about this stuff, will help us break down these money taboos and conversations that we're afraid of having in our relationship. So maybe you take this discussion and you share it with your partner, certainly share it with your girlfriends. And in the next episode, we're going to be speaking to Maramadi Mambule, who is a fiduciary expert, about estate planning and how to protect your legacy and your children. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.